City of Columbia, Monday, April 17th, 2023, City Council meeting to order. I invite all those who are able to please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Sheila, will you please call roll?
Yes. Ms. Wainer?
Here.
Mr. Lovelady?
Here.
Mr. Foster?
Here.
Mr. Waterman? Ms. Peters?
Here.
Ms. Buffalo?
Here.
Mr. Knoth?
Here.
All right. All right. So welcome. We have multiple opportunities for the public to speak during our council meetings. There are options under the old business, new business, portions of the agenda, as well as public hearing at the beginning. We ask that when you're commenting on those portions of the agenda, that you keep your discussions to the legislation being discussed. At the end of the meeting, we have general comments when you can talk about things that have already been discussed or any other topic. You'll be given 3 minutes as an individual to speak, or you may request 5 minutes if representing an organization affected by the item. I do ask that you please respect the time limit so that everybody has an opportunity to speak. Similarly, there's always opportunities to disagree, and so I ask that people not applaud, boo, snap, or do any other sort of demonstrative item that makes people feel uncomfortable or intimidated from speaking. And again, always show respect for one another. We are all neighbors. Next up on our agenda, we have our approval of minutes. So I'll make a motion to approve the April 3rd, 2023 regular meeting minutes. Do I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. And then when it comes to approval and adjustment of the agenda, including the consent agenda, I think Council Member Peters has to abstain from a few things. Do you want to read your abstention?
I do. Thank you, Mayor. I'm requesting permission to abstain from voting or participating in the decision-making process on matters relating to funding for the Voluntary Action Center, including PH 1623 and R6523 on tonight's agenda, which are related to the FY 2023 Annual Action Plan for CDBG and Home Funds and allocations of HUD funding within the city.
All right.
Filed a detailed public disclosure of interest form with the city clerk.
All right, so I make a motion to allow her abstention. Do I have a second?
Thank you.
Seconded by Roy. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. Moving on. Does anyone have any other changes to the agenda? All right, seeing none. I make a motion to approve the agenda with the abstention. Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Nick Foster. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, moving on. We have no special items tonight, and so now we'll go to appointments to boards and commission. The City of Columbia has numerous boards and commissions that advise council on projects and programs around our community. We advertise almost every month for vacancies, so keep an eye out if you missed any on this one. Sheila, our first one up is Board of Adjustment. Will you please do a roll call vote for the one vacancy?
Ms. Wainer?
Peter Norgard.
Mr. Lovelady?
Peter Norgard.
Mr. Foster?
Peter Norgard.
Ms. Peters?
Peter Norgard.
Ms. Buffalo?
Peter Norgard.
Mr. Knoth?
Peter Norgard.
All right, moving on. For Downtown Columbia Leadership Council, we have one applicant for the resident vacancy and one applicant we have one vacancy for the general vacancy. So if agreeable, because we have one applicant for the resident vacancy, we can just appoint Jonathan Adkins. Is there any objection?
Without objection.
No objection. Moving that Jonathan Adkins will serve as the resident vacancy. And then Sheila, will you please call roll for the general vacancy?
Ms. Wainer?
Jacob Britt.
Mr. Lovelady?
Jacob Britt.
Mr. Foster?
Britt.
Ms. Peters?
Jacob Britt.
Ms. Buffalo?
Jacob Britt.
Mr. Knoth?
Jacob Britt.
quick note. I just know we're going to be re-advertising the Historic Preservation Commission one for the expertise in historic preservation. So at the end of the meeting, I might request an ordinance to come back to remove that because we've been re-advertising that one for a long time. So I'm just making a note, and if I forget, somebody remind me. When we come to the Housing and Community Development Commission, we have had a request, and a few council members have also mentioned this. And if agreeable, I propose that we continue to accept applications for this commission and make appointments at our May 15th meeting. The applicant that we have, obviously, their application will stay for this, but we'll also accept additional ones. Is there any objection to that? And Sheila, do I need a motion or anything for that?
Not if everyone's agreeable.
Is there any objection to that?
Objection.
Okay.
So I'm re-advertising.
Re-advertising, okay. Correct. And then Human Services Commission, we have one vacancy and three applicants. So Sheila, will you please call roll?
Ms. Wehner?
Barbie Banks.
Mr. Lovelady?
Barbie Banks.
Mr. Foster?
Barbie Banks.
Ms. Peters?
Mark Colbert.
Ms. Buffalo?
Barbie Banks.
Mr. Knuth?
Barbie Banks.
Barbie is on that one. And then similarly, at our last council meeting for the Planning and Zoning Commission, those whose terms are on here are expire at the end of May. We had discussed our last council meeting interviewing planning and zoning applicants. And so if there's no objection, we will continue to accept applications for this one. And then we will do interviews during our pre-council on May 15th for then the appointments to be made. Is there any objection to that?
Without objection.
All right.
And if we have quite a few applicants, then I will reach out as soon as the deadline is over to ask you guys to reduce the number that you're going to interview similarly to what you did for Citizens Police Review Board.
Right. And regardless of whether or not they're interviewed, they can still be appointed that night. It's
correct.
Just whether or not for us to do it.
Correct, because you guys might be familiar with some people and not familiar with
right.
others.
Right. All right. All right, moving on to scheduled public comment. Members of the public have an opportunity to contact the city manager's office the Wednesday prior to the city council meeting to schedule a public comment. Scheduled public comment cannot be on items that are on that same night's agenda. And tonight we have one scheduled public comment. So I'd like to invite Susan Renee Carter to please come to the podium.
Yes. So I'm representing Race Matters Friends, and we take your jobs very seriously. So I wanted to kind of outline for new members, and I see one of our new members isn't here, but it'll be recorded for him, is that last Friday, Pat and Matt passed on to Nick and Don to represent their wards on the city council. And while the dynamics change with new members who understandably have different styles and perspectives, there are also expectations that remain the same from community members. Our new council members should take note of what Matt Pitzer shared about this position, taking time to learn. If you come into this position thinking that you know more than the current members or those who are leaving, you will not experience the growth you need to be the best that you can be at this job. There is a lot to learn about the city operations and departments that people coming on board take for granted. The other members should be your mentor, but should not interfere with you making the right decisions for our city. You need to assess that for yourself. You should not support pet projects that are for your personal gain or your family's gain. While many council members are passionate about certain projects or community needs, your charge is to make decisions that support the collective needs and the needs of the marginalized, not your individual needs. Pat spent a lot of time consulting and surveying the community to make sure she knew what would best meet their needs. And when she erred in her decision-making, she admitted that she was wrong. People will respect you and trust you more if you do the same. You should not cause harm to community members when making decisions. This is a tricky expectation in that often you will be asked to vote on something that seems positive or benign. But it isn't. When you are presented with a project or an ordinance, before supporting it, you need to ask yourself if it will be a good use of staff time. Will it take away from projects that serve the broader community? Is the money used going to take away from those who need it the most? Are there missing steps from that are needed to be addressed first? Because oftentimes we put the horse before the cart, or the cart before the horse. You need to ask, is this project or ordinance going to cause harm to others? Does this project or ordinance support or help with other plans that we already have in place? If you can't answer these questions in a positive way, you need to ask more questions. Vote no, or try to amend the project to ensure positive outcomes. You should do your homework before attending meetings. You cannot make good decisions if you don't. You should study all of the documents and find research, information, and resources when you don't understand or need additional information. People need to know that you care enough to come prepared and ready to do the work. Lastly, the community expects you to be honest, transparent, and accountable, and that you hold others on the council to the same standards. If you can't do that, you need to resign now. Thank you.
Moving on to public hearings. Public hearing 1523, Sheila, will you please read?
Public hearing 1523 is the proposed annexation of property located on the west side of Highway PP and north of Mexico Gravel Road.
Do we have a staff report?
You do, and thank you, Mayor. Good evening. I'm Tim Teddy, Community Development Director, and presenting this annexation request. It's actually two different annexation petitions that have been received. One is for the North Tract, which is an oblong parcel located here off of Highway PP. This is in the northeast of Columbia. You can see Mexico Gravel Road comes around here and then transitions into Route PP. And this is directly north of the existing Fox Creek subdivision, which is a subdivision that does have a number of homes within it and is still undergoing development. And then the South Tract, the larger of the two, is a petition received from JR2 Development. They're the developer of Fox Creek. They're also, if you recognize the name, they are also the developer that was involved in the annexation agreement that we reviewed last time on Richland Road. So they will be the developer of all of this in a enlarged Fox Creek subdivision. And there has, in fact, been a preliminary plat of subdivision approved that brings the total project size to 85 single-family residential lots. And so this is an annexation very much motivated by development. Not all annexations are that way, but this one is. And that's a city neighborhood. The Maryland Heights subdivision is directly to the west. So the area of both tracts together is 16 1/4 acres. This whole area does have access to city services, including water, electric, sewer, and then, of course, solid waste service, fire and police protection. Services will be added upon annexation. Highway PP is a MoDOT lettered route. And here's an aerial perspective that shows a little more clearly the annexation tracts. Fox Creek subdivision here in between them is existing city. And then there's a vacant portion of that that's the phase two of Fox Creek already in the city limits. There is a street end here. That's Webster Groves, part of the Maryland Heights subdivision. Evidently somebody really liked Metropolitan St. Louis, because there's a lot of suburb names on the streets. And and then the south parcel here, and you can see the area is a mix of the more compact subdivisions that are part of Columbia, and then mostly out in the unincorporated county, you have some very large lots and low density of development. So this will just show how that new subdivision plan is going to come together. And there are separate council bills on this that have been introed. And will be on your agenda next time. Annexation law requires an interval of 14 days to pass between the hearing and the passage of the ordinance that annexes the property. The ordinance that annexes the property would also make the zoning city R1, and that R1 zoning is something that the Planning and Zoning Commission looked at. They also looked at the preliminary plat of subdivision here. Preliminary means they're not ready to record the lots just yet. They're going to develop construction plans if council gives the go-ahead on this plan, and then they'll develop a subdivision and the construction plans for the streets and other infrastructure that go with it, and then come back with a final plat of subdivision that actually creates the lots. But they've got this really long block here. They did get a recommendation to approve that as a design adjustment. And there was a long block as well that received a similar design adjustment on the original preliminary plat for Fox Creek. And there was going to be kind of a zigzag street system through there. What they're doing now is completing this as a loop. And then at the commission's recommendation, they're going to mitigate that long block by putting a walkway through mid-block. So for pedestrians moving between the neighborhoods and between the streets, they'll have a shortcut, if you will. For vehicles, it's going to be a little more circuitous, and that might be better for vehicles moving through the subdivisions, so because it's going to discourage what I'd call cut-through traffic because you have such a long loop. So I just wanted to throw that in. It's a development issue, not an annexation issue, but just wanted to mention it. This shows a little more clearly the difference between the annexation pieces and the phase two part of Fox Creek that's already in the city limits. So you just have the hearing tonight. That's all that needs to be done. I'll try to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Are there any questions by council? Yes, Betsy.
Tim, I have a couple questions. One is the Maryland Heights Street. Is that going to, and I realize this is probably more planning and zoning than public hearing, but is that going to connect to the phase two?
Yes.
Okay, and yes. And everybody knows that? That's not going to be a big
problem?
Yeah,
there were notices sent to folks that are in the immediate vicinity of this. And that's why we do these dead-end streets to exterior boundaries, is so that they can be extended at some point. I won't say I'm assured that everybody knows this is happening, but we do make an effort to send notices out.
And is that a fairly new subdivision there?
That's 2005, I think, was their plat. Okay. And then as you go farther west, older, but yeah. So it's been a few years that's been in place. The prelim plat for this that's also been in front of council had that same connection.
Okay.
Instead of a T intersection, it was more of an L intersection.
And then these long roads that you have that are currently listed there with just that pedestrian walkthrough, what is to keep people from speeding along those roads and then coming back to the council and saying we need to do some speed bumps?
Well, I think the point, there's some curvature to it. So I think that discourages it a little. The fact that you're approaching a curve and you're approaching a 180 degree curve ought to discourage speeding. I realize people are done.
Want to see how fast they can make that curve. Okay. That just looks like a problem in the future. And then last, this is strictly a residential area, right? Because I'm starting to look for where we can put recycling places, because we don't have any recycling out there that I'm aware of. But I don't know that this is an appropriate place for that, so I'm just bringing that up as a question.
Okay. Yeah, the zoning's either agriculture or residential. There is the county hit. There's some kind of a rural-oriented business right here where the cursor's circling.
Where he's circling.
This building here, I don't know if it's antiques or something, and I don't know that it has long hours, but otherwise, commercials pretty much down in the Lake of the Woods, St. Charles area.
Because that just might be something to consider before everything's built out. That would be helpful to have something in that area.
Okay.
Those are my only questions and or comments.
Any other council questions? I'll go ahead and open up the public hearing. If anybody wishes to speak on public hearing 1523, please come to the podium.
So Susan Renee Carter, Ward 2. I do have a question because Betsy brought up a good point about these streets and traffic. And so I was just wondering, you know, Local Motion has a lot of really good ideas for how to discourage fast traffic. And so I was just wondering if you've made any contact with them to see if they had ideas, because that is kind of a long, people could get some speed up from there. And I can see you having to put in the little calming bumps that maybe if you did something else that you wouldn't have to add an extra expense down the road. Anyway, just a thought.
Any other public comments?
So this is an area that I'm actually—
Chris, can you say your name?
Oh, sorry. Chris Jones, Second Ward. This is an area I'm actually fairly familiar with because I have a friend that I visit about once a week, just a little bit further or closer. And something that is that we need to take into account is that this area is almost exclusively upper, middle, and lower upper class. And we don't need any more of those type houses in Columbia. Pat, several months ago, did a study and she found out how many of those types of houses are vacant in Columbia, and it's like over 2,000, or, you know, it was an extraordinary amount. Right now we have an extremely low amount of affordable housing. Andrea, I know that you've talked about this a lot. Pat talked about it extensively. And if we are going to be building up, adding land in these types of subdivisions, we need to put in something that says that they have to put in affordable housing too. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Would anyone else from the public wish to speak? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing. Any additional council comments? Again, we're not voting on this tonight. This is just the annexation, and the bills will be, they're introduced later on. Yeah, Nick, Foster.
Thank you. I had the same concern about traffic that Betsy mentioned, and that it was also mentioned by Renee, that I looked at this and I thought right away about the speed that would be picked up along those longer portions and how we might have traffic calming come back to us. So I don't know that I'm looking for this answer right now, but I'm just curious to know how we go about making determinations about new streets, and with those concerns in mind. Already our traffic calming list is longer than we can really adequately address. And as we put in new streets, new roadways, I would really hope that this issue is something that's actually top of mind in terms of what we do to make it accessible, but also to make it safe in that regard.
We tend to get the request, as you know, we tend to get the request for traffic calming on streets that are generally older and straighter and long without intersections.
And wide.
At intervals. So if you feel this is kind of in that category, it's probably something we could look at. In the right of way, there might be the possibility of a little more curvature or something.
You can ask the Public Works Director who's standing right behind you if you want to.
Yeah.
And I think the question is, as we're looking at new development, what are the difference in standards that you won't be coming back to us with traffic calming suggestions?
Tim covered it for the most part. Curvilinear design, not such long straightaways when it comes to brand new subdivision streets. We do quite a bit of traffic calming, but of our big long list, there's only a handful that were built since we adopted those that change in design requirements. So we're pretty confident that our new roads, we don't have traffic calming issues like we did on some of the roads that were built historically.
Okay. Any other council comments? Yeah, Andrea.
What is our inclusionary zoning options? Do we have any? You currently do not have inclusionary zoning in your ordinance.
Any other council comments? All right, thank you. And this is just a public hearing, so nothing's being voted on today. So we'll move on to, well, you covered it really well, Tim, but it is related to B7823, which will be considered at the May 1st, 2023 meeting, as well as 79 and 80. All right, Sheila, will you please read public hearing 1623 and resolution 6523?
Public hearing 1623 is the consideration of the FY 2023 Annual Action Plan for CDBG and Home Funds. Council Bill 6523 is a resolution approving the FY 2023 Annual Action Plan for CDBG and Home Funds, authorizing the city manager to submit the document to the Department of Housing and Urban Development.
Do we have a staff report?
Jennifer Deaver, I'm the Housing Programs Manager. So basically what we have tonight is the FY 2023 Annual Action Plan. This is due to HUD by April 28th of 2023. The Annual Action Plan is a concise summary of our actions, activities, and the specific federal and non-federal resources that will be used each year to address priority needs and specific goals identified by the 2020 to 2024 consolidated plan. The FY 2023 fund amounts were released by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development on February 27th, 2023. And at that point, we did have 60 days to develop the plan and to notice it. Approval of the FY 2023 Annual Action Plan is required in order to receive the CDBG and Home Program funding for the FY 2023 projects. Following a public hearing, approval of the plan by resolution is in order, and a 30-day comment period runs until April 24th, 2023. Any comments received will be reported to the Council and to HUD, and the plan is due on April 28th, 2023. The projects that were approved last year for the FY 2023 CDBG and home funds, as you can see here, we have in CDBG, we have $1,002,486, and in home funds, we were allotted $603,540.
Questions? Are there any questions of staff from council? I'll go ahead and open up the public hearing. Would anybody from the public wish to speak on 1623 and resolution 6523, approving the fiscal year 23 annual action plan of CDBG and home funds?
So Susan Renee Carter, Ward 2, and just I have a couple of questions. So it's my understanding that the state has pulled part of the ARP allocations. Is that true? And if so, what are your plans to advocate that they're reinstated? And I don't know if this is covered in this or not.
They are not. I don't think so.
Oh, okay. So I don't have any questions.
We'll put a pin in that one.
Okay.
Thank you, Renee. Would anybody else from the public wish to speak on the fiscal year 23 annual action plan for CDBG and home funds? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing. Any council comments? Yeah, Nick.
Just want to mention that really this is done in light of, help me out, Tim, the five-year comprehensive plan.
Consolidated plan.
And so that guides how this is used, but I did ask about this earlier, and Mr. Teddy got back to me. There has been some flexibility about how we're spending money in relation to, even within a five-year plan, there can be changes in what the needs are, and that this is being done by staff and by the commission as well. So I just want to note that we're being attentive to what the current needs are as we make these decisions, and these kinds of numbers reflect that, just in general.
Yeah. And I guess to that point, we're in the fourth year of it, I think we are. And so does that mean that while next year is the fifth year of that plan, will we also start the public engagement process?
Correct. And okay. The consolidated plan will be aligned with the CAPR next year.
Another acronym. Thank you, Jennifer. All right. Any other council comments? All right. Thank you. Sheila, will you please call the roll on R6523?
Council Bill 6523, Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Ms. Peters? Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Mr. Knoth?
Yes.
All right. Moving on to old business. On old business, first up we have B7323. Sheila, will you please read Bill 7323?
Council Bill 7323 is an ordinance amending the FY 2023 annual budget for second quarter appropriation of funds and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
All right. It's my understanding is this because this is an amendment for account numbers correction?
That is correct.
Okay, so I'm assuming that's our staff report. Are there any questions of council? Would anyone from the public wish to speak on our typo? Seeing none. There's an amendment sheet to go with this one, so I make a motion to amend Bill 7323 per the amendment sheet. Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Andrea. All those in favor of amending, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Sheila, will you please call roll on B7323 as amended?
Council Bill 7323 as amended. Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Mr. Knoth?
Yes.
All right. Moving on to old business, Bill 7423. Sheila, will you please read?
Council Bill 7423 is an ordinance authorizing an affordable housing funding agreement with the Housing Authority of the City of Columbia and Park Avenue Housing Development Group, LP, for the issuance of American Rescue Plan Act ARPA funds to replace downtown public housing units on Park Avenue, approving certain documents, amending the FY 2023 annual budget by appropriating funds, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Do we have a staff report? Who would be the staff report? Dick Carlin, are you the staff?
No, I wasn't the staff, but I can give the staff report. This is a project that we've been talking about, the Park Avenue project with the Housing Authority. This allocates $2 million for that project.
Okay, and this was the resolution that we did before they applied for their housing tax credits, right, that we approved last fall?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I imagine the applicant, or I think Randy is here. For this part, since I guess, Randy, if everyone's with me, I'm going to invite Randy Cole to come up. So if we have any questions, he can be our staff response. Are there any council questions for Randy?
Just wanted to confirm, Randy, you were successful in with getting those tax credits, correct?
Yes, sir. Yep.
And that's the amount of how much?
So the city's agreement is $2 million. The county provided $5 million, or committed $5 million in ARPA funds, and the tax credits is a little over $13 million, about a little over $20 in total.
Are there any council questions before we open to public comment, of which, Randy, you can be the first public comment since you're there? Any other questions? Okay, I'll go ahead and open up for public comment. Randy, do you want five? I'm assuming you're going to ask for five since you are the applicant.
Yes, can I have five, please?
Luca, can we give Housing Authority five, please? Luca. Good. Luca. 5 minutes. Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Randy Cole, CEO of the Columbia Housing Authority. First off, I want to thank the mayor for bringing forth the resolution of support back in last September, and the broader city council for unanimous support. We wouldn't be where we're at without the council's support that brought additional funds to the table. So we all appreciate that support greatly. Council approval of this ordinance will ensure 70 of our community's most vulnerable households in need of safe, energy efficient, and quality affordable housing will have $20 million, a little over, of direct investments into their housing. This project will also expand the number of units on Park Avenue by 10%, or 9 units. With the development of our Kenny Point project at 34 and the 9 additional on Park Avenue, this will result in the largest expansion of CHA's housing portfolio since the completion of Bear Creek and Pacman Tower in 1973. CHA still maintains over 1,200 households on our wait list and regularly sees over 150 people in our lobby each week in need of housing with supportive services. So this project is very timely and will make a big impact on those households. CHA's Park Avenue application leveraged over $13 million in state tax credit funding and was tied for first in the state as the highest scoring tax credit application in the state. The two primary drivers for this high score were first and foremost the City Council and our County Commission's support for the project. The second was the level of supportive services that the Columbia Housing offers to the project and all of our properties and all of our residents. CHA maintains a resident services department of 35 employees that include case managers, family self-sufficiency coordinators, and other service-oriented staff that connect CHA residents to resources, including elderly populations, disabled populations, veterans, and families. We're also a licensed child care provider and provide after-school and summer school programming through our Moving Ahead program. We also partner with a variety of nonprofits here locally to help bring services onto our properties, and we're appreciative of their assistance as well. All of these services will be offered and available to current and future Park Avenue residents. The City Council can also be reassured that CHA has made a good faith effort to ensure the plans for the project directly reflect the values of the community at large and puts the needs, desires, and our residents of our residents at Park Avenue first. Since April of 2021, we've held a community-wide engagement meeting at the Second Baptist Church. We've conducted, myself and other staff, door-to-door on Park Avenue, explaining the project, also listening to people, hearing what their input is and what their needs were. We held multiple barbecue events on site, including a carnival with bounce house, games, food, and even exotic animals. This was all in an effort to do everything possible to engage our residents, to get them out, to look at the plans, to hear their input, and hear their voices so we could reflect their voices in our plans. Much of our community and CHA resident feedback requested maintaining a sense of neighborhood that also blended with the surrounding area. So our plans reflect these values with multiple smaller buildings with enhanced facades and roof pitches that match and blend with the neighborhood. Along with the 20-year commitment to the city that the funding is secured to the property, this project also includes a 25-year project-based Section 8 contract for all the units to ensure an ongoing financing mechanism, and that contract is also required to be renewable. So that will ensure that this property is affordable in perpetuity and beyond our lifetimes. The ownership of this project is under entities under full control of the CHA board, and it also aligns with IRS tax code, LIHTC tax code, and ensures that the housing story stays in the driver's seat throughout the project completion and through beyond the compliance period. So you can rest assured that the project will remain affordable in perpetuity. Lastly, CHA staff regularly walks our properties, including Park Avenue, and connects on a very personal level with all of our residents each week, almost every day. CHA residents are clearly very excited for this project, and it means a great deal to them. They're very appreciative of the City Council and the community at large support and attention to their needs on Park Avenue. Also, kind of in closing, on behalf of CHA, our staff, our board, and in particular our residents, we thank the City Council's support thus far, and we would hope that you approve this authorization of this agreement. So thank you.
Thank you, Randy. Would anybody else from the public wish to speak on Bill 7423?
Eugene Elkin, 3406 Rangeline. I was with a committee, organization called GROW, and I fought hard for these individuals to have their home. What I did was just merely common sense, which we're having lack of nowadays. Walk up and find no cracks. Why do you tear something down that has no cracks? And apparently the board got on, knowing what I said, hey, how about gutting and redoing these housing for the needy? The gentleman from Washington, D.C. was here once, came back, thanked me very much for my suggestion of how many millions of dollars was saved by gutting. I'm not telling you you've got to continue to gut. Could we please do something with the fine structure of bricks that would be a real message to what recycling is, and are we going to build back brick? Why would I say something that stupid? If you're listening to the news, our world is having constant storms. We need secure housing for these individuals that is strong, takes the weather, all climates, and out of gossip, rumor says these people will not be put back in the housing. Please assure those people that they have guaranteed home when this is over. Just because Eugene says, I've always said, check it out. But that's not fair if you're going to move people and not have guaranteed home.
Thank you, Eugene.
As you know, I've been up here on the subject of homelessness on and on. That's a whole other group. Thank you.
Would anybody else from the public wish to speak?
Good evening. My name is Anthony Stanton. I live at 315 LaSalle. I'm the president of the Community Land Trust, but I'm speaking on a personal note. Talked to Randy before I got up here, and he answered all my questions, so I'm just verifying what he told me. Make sure that it's on the record. Park Street is a important link to the historic neighborhoods of African Americans here in Columbia. It's flanked by two historic churches. We've got Blind Boone's house. We've got the Annie Fisher location is very close, and we've got the Heritage Trail that runs through there. So my concern was, number one, how the deal was structured, which Randy explained to me, and that it remained affordable. The 20-year deadline kind of bothered me, but he told me that that is the 20-year cycle for Section 8. So he has assured me that it will remain permanently affordable, his words, and as long as that is the case and that the historic neighborhood that's important to African Americans and important to the nation stays permanently affordable and is not going to fall in the hands of the private sector, I am in full support of the renovation and renewal of Park Street. Thank you.
Would anybody else from the public wish to speak on Bill 7423?
Susan Renee Carter, Ward 2. The only question I had is, I think I missed what the number of units that are projected. And so you could have Randy tell 60. Us what that was.
Thank
you.
Also, each of the current residents will have the first right to move back, and we pay for all that, so it's guaranteed that they come back per the federal law and because we want to do that.
I was going to ask you to come back after all the questions. Sorry. There might be other questions, but no, you're good. But anybody else from the public wish to ask a question, make a comment on Bill 7423?
My name is Kelly Ballinger, a longtime resident of Columbia. I'm not real sure what ward I'm in. I live on the north side of town. One of my concerns about this project, not really major concern, but if we are going to be allocating federal dollars, we're going to be looking at diversity, inclusion, and individuals being able to, such as minorities, being able to participate in this project. I would really like to know what is the possibility of keeping those dollars local for the contractors that are here in Columbia locally, not necessarily the large contractors, but contractors such as myself. I've been here, I've worked with the Neighborhood Revitalization Program here at the city for a couple of years. And to be able to be a part of something of this size and this magnitude would be great for smaller businesses like mine. I wanted to participate in the last major renovation that they had years ago. They brought the company out of Kansas City or wherever. And I put my name in the hat, and it seemed as though you could get your name in, you could get your business in, but if it was left to a larger general contractor, the general contractor would pull from outside the local area. I just think that it really needs to be a fair representation for local contractors, smaller local contractors.
Thank you. Thank you. Would anybody else from the public wish to speak?
Chris Jones, Second Ward. The gentleman who, in the back right now, he said that there was going to be 79 units. We're getting approximately just over $20 million. Just as a heads up, that means that we're dedicating towards each unit $253,164.56. That seems like a lot of money and does not seem like it's affordable housing. It seems like there's some wonky things going on. Also, I am in agreeance with this last gentleman. We do need to keep local dollars local. If we want to build our community, if we want to get in those higher wage jobs, we need to be hiring local people and have that part there. And as a proud union member, I would really like us to focus on union contractors. Thank you.
Would anybody else from the public wish to speak on Bill 7423? Seeing none, we'll go to council comments or questions. If there were any, were there leftover questions that we need to ask Randy to come back up? Yes.
Yeah, I really would like Randy to speak to the gentleman's question. I don't know what specifically HUD's guidelines are for minority and women-owned businesses in particular in terms when it comes to construction. So are there guidelines for that or even requirements?
Sure. I appreciate the comments earlier. Before we started this whole effort, it was on day two that I started at CHA. I made a very intentional decision to reevaluate our developer consultant relationship and who that entity was. We also had a community process that involved a CHA resident, community members, a couple of board members, not staff, and deciding who the next developer consultant would be. And we chose a gentleman, Matt Folsom, Folsom Housing Group, out of Lee Summit. They were the strongest organization that had the most wins at MHDC, but they were also a minority-owned business, and the owner, Matt, actually grew up in Section 8 housing. So he really knocked it out of the park on what he presented to our board, how he connects with our residents. Being a company with that background, those values, they're fully committed to incorporating minority-owned businesses throughout the contracting processes. We've done that a bit with some of our soft costs with our environmental review studies, and we plan to do that further as we bid the project. I've been really advocating and telling our developer consultant and our builder that we want to bid locally and get as much local work as possible. We think between Park Avenue and Kenny Point, our estimates show that it'll support about 100 local jobs. So we're fully committed to doing that. We have all the connections in place to make sure the word gets out, and we will do everything in our power to get the word out to get local contractors and as many MBE and WE businesses involved that we can, and just try to do it right.
Thank you. Good to hear.
Did that answer your question, Betsy? Any other questions for Randy? Hey, thank you, Randy. Appreciate it. Figured you were going to say preferred bidder.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say this would be a really good opportunity for us to have prevailing wage and responsible bidder ordinances in place so that we could outline exactly what Randy's referred to and what Chris also spoke to.
Yeah. Any other council comments? None. Excited for it to go forward. I'll get you. Excited for it to go forward. Impressive with getting the number one or tied for number one highest rated project in the state. So congratulations to Housing Authority and your whole team. Sheila, will you please call the roll on Bill 7423?
Council Bill 7423, Ms. Wainer?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Mr. Knuth?
Yes.
All right, moving on. Sheila, will you please read Bill 7523?
Council Bill 7523 is an ordinance amending Chapter 15 of the City Code as it relates to sessions of the municipal court and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Do we have a staff report, Judge Nose?
Hello. So this is going to be on the ordinance, which is the when of municipal court, and we'll have a brief interlude before we get to the resolution on the where of municipal court that both needed to be changed. This particular ordinance is going to address, the amendment will address standard work week, special sessions, closing, and canceling court. And so to give you just an overview, right now what we're doing is 50 hours a week plus two night courts a month. And so we're doing that with some limited amounts of staff. Currently, we're at 8.75, but we're actually only at 5.75 staffed right now. And so one of the things that this will allow me to do is to try out 4-day work weeks. But what that will allow us to do is keep those extended hours, which are 7:30 plus lunch to 5:30 each day. So instead of doing that 5 days a week, we'd be doing that 4 days a week. So we could try to see if that will work better, not only for staff, but also for coverage, given the caseloads that we have, which are down, and the amount of staff that we currently have. I'm hoping that that will kind of take some of the pressure off. And then I will come back to you with the resolution here in a little bit about the where, but I'd happy to answer any questions about the ordinance now.
Are there any council comments or questions for Kavanaugh? I'm going to open it up for public if they have questions. Would anybody from the public wish to speak on Bill 7523? Seeing none, did any questions all of a sudden come to council? No? All right, Sheila, will you please read, call the roll on Bill 7523?
Council Bill 7523, Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Mr. Knuth?
Yes.
All right, moving on to the consent agenda. Sheila, will you please call the roll on, or sorry, will you please read the consent, the items on the consent agenda?
Items on the consent agenda include bills 6423, 6523, 6623, 6723, 6823, 6923, 7023, 7123, 7223, and resolutions 5723, 5823, 5923, 6023, 6123, and 6223. Bills 6423, 6523, 6623, 6723, 6823, 6923, 7023, 7123, 7223, and resolutions 5723, 5823, 5923, 6023, 6123, and 6223. Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Mr. Knuth?
Yes.
All right. Moving on to new business. Up first, we have a resolution 6323. Sheila, will you please read?
Council Bill 6323 is a resolution authorizing the temporary closure of a portion of the sidewalk and parking lane on the south side of Walnut Street and vehicular lane shifting on Walnut Street between Orr Street and Hubble Drive to facilitate the construction of the Broadway Tower 2 located at 1104 East Walnut Street.
Do we have a staff report?
Yes. Shane Creech, Director of Public Works. The applicant requests to close parallel parking spaces and sidewalk on the south side of Walnut from June 1st, 2023 to October 31st, 2024 to facilitate the construction of a new building at 1104 East Walnut Street. There's currently no parking on the north side of Walnut. The applicant proposes to install a crosswalk on the east side of the project to facilitate pedestrian connectivity during construction. There's an existing mid-block crosswalk on the west side of the project. The total road width of Walnut is 33 feet. The applicant proposes two 11-foot driving lanes in the protected area to facilitate deliveries. The geometry of the alley between Broadway and Walnut currently prohibits its use for this purpose. This alley is currently one way to the east and would require entry off of 10th Street. Here's a couple photos. The one on the right is the existing alley entrance off of 10th Street. It's quite tight. And then the existing Walnut right-of-way is the picture below. The location of this building is kind of right where that retaining wall is. That's kind of where the front of that building is going to go. This is just a picture of the traffic control plan that was in your packet. believe the applicant and some of his representatives are here tonight that can probably answer more detailed questions about what they propose and how it's going to work, but I'm happy to answer any questions you all might have.
Well, go down the row. Betsy?
So my first question is, so we're just closing, and they're asking just to flat out close the sidewalk. They're not talking about any kind of protected walkway or any way that people can still get by there on that side of the street?
Correct. They're proposing to install a crosswalk there on the east end of the project that doesn't exist today to cross pedestrians to the north side of the road. They aren't proposing anything like that. The alley behind the existing hotel building isn't conducive to delivery semis for, you know, they're building a high rise. So that's what they want to use that space when they shift traffic over in that location.
Okay, thanks.
Nick, you had some questions?
Yeah, Shane, I wrote earlier, and you were kind enough to respond to some of my questions about accessibility then with this sidewalk. I appreciate that there would be another crosswalk placed. And my concern is with people who are blind or have vision challenges and being able to really get through that area. I immediately thought of what happened with 10th and Broadway some months back when we were able to make some adjustments to that so that people can access that sidewalk without having to cross the street. In this case, I don't see a way for that to happen. So assuming that, because we just don't have the room to put in a walkway, but assuming that that is true, I'm concerned still about those people in our community who would use it this way and really would encounter this without any prior knowledge unless someone has told them about it, which I imagine we would make every effort to let the community know. Still, it's not hard to imagine someone going there and encountering the closed sidewalk and being disoriented at that point about what their options are. So you did write that this is something, what I took you to say is that this is something we can continue to look at and the possibility to come up with some options for this. You mentioned that you've got people going to the ADA meeting pretty soon, I think.
There's a symposium in Kansas City.
May 22nd.
I've got both of my design engineers going, regardless of this, but that gives me a good opportunity to target some of the sessions that they go to, mm-hmm. When it comes to folks with vision-related issues.
I mean, I recognize that it's a challenge, but I would just encourage us to find out what. Do you have any thoughts about that at this point beyond
sure. The ADA? The issue really is, and we deal with this a lot downtown. We don't want to close. They've where their hard closure is. They've put that just past the businesses in that building that'll go right next to this, the building that they propose. So when you come to the mid, I'll see if I can.
You could point that out.
Here's the existing mid-block crosswalk. This building right here, this is where the hard closure is. This is, and so the doors to those businesses want to be able to allow this sidewalk so that folks can come past that mid-block crosswalk to get to this business. Same thing on the other end. They're putting in this mid-block crosswalk, but right here is the most obvious way to get into the Short Street garage. So if they put a what I call a jersey barrier, a hard barrier across the sidewalk, so that someone that was had vision issues would come to a barrier to cross. That would block off the sidewalk in both directions from either the businesses on the west side or the Short Street garage on the east.
I guess what I'm thinking of though is someone who would want to traverse that entire area,
right?
Going from west to east or other, or in reverse.
Right.
That's a hard stop on either way.
Yes.
Well, I want to encourage you to continue to look to problem solve this. I'd also recommend reaching out to the Disabilities Commission, not only about getting their input about the actual project itself, but also about informing the community about this need. We've heard from folks on the commission and others who have a real concern here, and I share it.
Try and explain scale. The pedestrian pathway on Broadway from the outside edge of that barrier to the other outside edge is about 9 feet, and right, that provides a 5-foot walkway through there. So if you put that in, there's really no place for them to deliver. And my concern would be, the reason that I'm in favor of this is if you tried to do deliveries with intermittent closures, well, then there's no predictability. So that, in my mind, that'd be even worse to someone in this situation. We're going to have this closed in this way for 18 months, so folks will get used to that. But if we're closing it every time deliveries are coming in, number one, we'd have to close it down to college, and it would be unpredictable. If you are going through that area on Thursday, some weeks it'd be closed, some weeks it wouldn't. And so that's really what makes me.
Yeah, I get it. I just, you know, it's a hard one to address, and we're also talking about this area being closed for well over a year. And that's not insignificant as well.
There was a lot more room on Broadway. Those are right, angled in spots and more lanes.
Oh yeah, I get it. Water. I don't see a similar approach to this one because there's just not enough room to do it. But I just wonder what else might be possible. And I know you've talked about audible signals and that kind of thing, but concerned about the construction noise and that. But I just really encourage you to continue to see if we can't problem solve this.
Certainly.
Any other questions from council? Yeah, Nick Knoth.
I just want to second Nick Foster's comments and add that when you and your staff do come up with some suggestions and options to address this, to please run that by the Disabilities Commission before you come to council, if that is the path you're going to take.
Sure.
I have just a couple of questions on this. So you mentioned that the alleyway will not be... It's not suitable because of its narrowness at that west end for deliveries. And then ironically showed a car coming west rather than east on the one-way alley in the picture. Will that alley, though, remain open during construction?
There's nothing proposed as part of this to limit access to the alley.
Okay, so the pedestrians that do utilize that when kind of cutting through from 10th Street going east will potentially be able to navigate down that alleyway going all the way to Short Street, it looks like. Well, actually, all the way to College if you continue on behind Papa John's. Okay. And then my second one, we have the notification letter in here in the list, and it obviously lists property owners. And so this is a question that comes up often. Are tenants also required to be notified?
Typically, they go door to door.
Okay.
And so that's usually what we hear is an owner won't be aware, but we've got signatures from either the store manager or the okay, restaurant manager, things like that. So they go door to door to the tenants.
So this is like, in addition, these are the properties, also the owner, but then they're also doing a door to door to notify. Okay. Any other council questions? And would anybody from the public wish to speak on Resolution 6323?
Chris Jones, Second Ward. I would just like to say I am more than a little disappointed that you did not consult the Disabilities Commission about this project in advance. They should have been the first stop. Also, I would like you, as council, to remember to think back maybe 45 minutes ago to what Renee said at the beginning of the meeting, that you need to think about who this affects. Because not only does this affect those with vision disabilities, but as a reminder, I'm mobility disabled. And this affects people like me. Yes, I do have good days, and on good days, it's not that big of a deal, but I also have a lot more bad days than I have good days. And then I think about the people who are in wheelchairs or the people who are in walkers. And, you know, you as people who are not mobility disabled or not vision disabled, you might think, well, it's not that big of a deal. But it is. It is a big deal. I would like for you to start putting the needs of the community's members over the needs of developers. Thank you.
Anybody else from the public wish to speak?
Good evening, Andy Green with Crockett Engineering, 1000 West Nifong Boulevard, building number one. Just wanted to summarize a couple things that Shane explained. Our whole goal is safety. We would love to be able to accommodate the pedestrians. Unfortunately, due to the dimensions of Walnut, it's just not in the cards to physically put that in there and keep two-way traffic open on Walnut. Secondly, for the deliveries to come on Walnut, if you think about it, there's never going to be a possibility where you can have a place for deliveries that would not cross a pedestrian path if you try to keep one open. At some point, there would be a crossing there if you were to try to keep a lane open on the south side. So what we've done is just directed people on the north side. It follows the recommendations given by the ADA and the MUTCD, the manual traffic control devices. And believe our plan meets Public Works recommendation, and just offer to answer any questions you guys have.
Would anybody else from the public wish to speak on resolution 6323? Any additional council comments or questions? Yeah, Nick.
Yeah, just one more. And this comes from your response earlier, Shane, which I was pleased to see, that the plan meets the ADA and manual on uniform traffic control devices requirements. So we're up to speed there. But you went on to say, therefore, the focus is now on any additional best practices beyond the legal minimum that could be implemented. And I think in order to address issues of accessibility, that's where our focus should be. And so I appreciate you describing it that way, that we do more than what's necessarily legally required here.
Any other council comments? Seeing none. Sheila, will you please read resolution 6? Please call the roll on resolution 6323.
Council Bill 6323, Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Ms. Peters? Yes. Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Mr. Knoth?
Yes.
Moving on to resolution 6423. Sheila, will you please read 6423?
Council Bill 6423 is a resolution designating the place where municipal court shall be held, authorizing certain circumstances in which the municipal judge may designate an alternate location.
Judge Nost, do we have a staff report?
Yes, so this would obviously authorize municipal court where municipal court currently is 600 East Broadway, but it would also let me to set special dockets in the case of emergency or if in case the courtroom was unavailable. So I'd give you an example of one of those ideas. Obviously with COVID, we were able to space out in the municipal courtroom, and it was a thing where the volume was not such that we couldn't handle it. By what I did was I spaced out extra dockets. So we spaced out extra dockets and actually kept some of those dockets to make sure people get spaced out. But if we had a larger volume, like some of the times when municipal court had more volume, we might have had to say, hey, can we come over to City Hall because there's a lot bigger space where we could space out more people or some other alternative place. Another example is when we actually, to make the court dais ADA accessible, we had to do some construction. Also pick COVID is a good time to do that. But in case we had to do something like that again where something was temporarily unavailable. And obviously if I was gonna have a special docket somewhere else, then I would be able to do that.
Any questions for Kavanaugh?
Very much.
Would anyone from the public wish to speak on resolution 6423? Seeing none. No council comments all of a sudden came back to you. No, just I appreciate putting out there and the flexibility you're looking to meet and the needs you're looking to meet. So thank you, Judge Nose. Sheila, will you please read call the roll on resolution 6423?
Council Bill 6423, Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Mr. Knoth?
Yes.
All right. We're moving on to intro and first reading. Sheila, will you please read the items under introduction and first reading?
All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Bills 7623, 7723, 7823, 7923, 8023, 8123, 8283, or 8223, 8423, 8523, 8623, 8723, 8823, 8923, 9023, 9123, 9223, 9323, 9423, and 9523, first reading.
Thank you. We're now at the report section of the night. Report 1923, Roy, this was, you had requested for this one to come back in. Do you want to say anything about the membership of the Youth Advisory Council, or if Sheila, I think you wrote this one.
I did, and it was in response to Councilmember Lovelady wanting to review the ordinance in light of the fact that they were having quorum issues, and currently we appoint 21 members, which makes the quorum 12, if my math is right. It's in the report. I don't have it in front of me. But you can go down. The ordinance is written to where there's only a minimum of 15. So you have flexibility there, 15, 17, 19, whatever. But the quorum is half, basically half plus one, if you want to put it that way, because you can't have a half person. And you might probably want an odd number. We are going to be advertising here starting Wednesday for the vacancies that are upcoming. And based on that, you could, if you wanted, go down to 15 minimum and still advertise some positions. So it's up to you and how low you want to go in your numbers. The two that could reapply, we've got people graduating plus people whose terms are up. There are two currently on there that could reapply, and we'd be advertising more than two vacancies to cover the people graduating and stuff. So there's flexibility there.
Any thoughts, Roy?
I would recommend going down to the 15 because for multiple reasons, those students may not be able to attend. Some don't have cars or parents are at work. So if we lower the quorum, they can at least have their meetings. I know that this coming up weekend, they have an event and they missed the opportunity to have their meeting this month. And I think the event is still set to go forth, but they missed that opportunity. So if we were to lower the quorum, they definitely would have the opportunity to always have their meetings.
Former YAC person. Yeah, one of the questions that I had when I think back to the years that I attended it is if we need to perhaps change the way that the commission works. Right now what we're doing is we're asking, and most of these people are sort of type A, high achieving types that add one more thing to their list of all the stuff they do, and they come in for their 2 hours or 3 hours, and they work in small groups, and we ask them what they're interested in learning more about. But I'm wondering whether we need to maybe reevaluate the reason we have this and whether we need to ask them to go into small groups and maybe learn more about how they can influence the council or how the city works. I'm not sure that the way it's set up, I don't have a good answer as to how to change it, but you've been on this for a year now too, and it just seems really somewhat disconnected, and I'm not sure if asking them to do a project is maybe the best use of their time and exposes them to the opportunities they would have to influence the city.
I don't think anyone asked them to do a project. I think that's what they've done before. Yes. So they continue to do what they've done as they've done before. So when we went to the National League of Cities, I took the opportunity to view some of their YAC boards, and they do things totally different in comparison to how our YAC board works. And I've even already spoke to DeCarlin about this. So they do need some insight. They kind of value Barbara's opinion more than mine. So they do. We can bring Barbara. We can bring the mayor. They say that a lot. they definitely could use some restructuring.
I know you're younger than me. You're like,
hey.
But I do think going down to 15 is probably a good idea. Yeah. But I think they're restructuring or trying to make it more worth their while and more we just need to reevaluate that whole thing.
Yes, Andrea.
I know when the Human Rights Commission was putting together the conversion therapy ban and then also talking about utility rates and emergency shutoffs, we were able to get the Youth Advisory Council's opinion on those things. And I would really love to see more of that sort of interaction where we're saying, hey, this impacts youth. What's your opinion on this? What should we do? What are we missing? So I'm in favor of that and of the 15, however we can get them to meet more regularly.
Yeah. So I think I'm hearing probably like consensus about at least coming back with the ordinance change for the 15.
We don't need an ordinance change.
We don't. Oh, because the way it's written.
It's already written down.
Okay. So that's good. But that does then minimize the quorum will just happen. You don't have to do anything to change that.
I guess I just need consensus that we want to go down to 15, and then I will advertise only the vacancies that'll make us
to that.
Get to 15. Just advertise those, and then that will address that issue. And the quorum basically says
of
half
appointed.
Of, yeah.
Okay. Is there?
Do the students that are presently on the council think that's a good idea, or have we asked them, or has it just been raggedy trying to get everybody together?
I haven't asked them, but for the past 2 months, they haven't had a meeting.
Okay.
So they are looking to definitely fix that so that they can at least meet. And I know.
And there's no one being removed from it, right? It's not like anybody currently, because they're all coming off.
Yeah, and that's exactly why I didn't want to respond at the last meeting. I wanted to double check that we wouldn't be
kicking somebody
off before I didn't think that was the case, but I didn't want to respond before checking that.
And even the way that's written is you have to miss six within a calendar year, but also the students come on like right at the end of the school year. So it's weird.
I mean, if that's an ordinance change you guys could consider if you wanted to make the attendance requirements stricter.
Or when the time starts? Because are you saying basically they get appointed and then they're on summer vacation?
Well, when YAC first started, they did not meet in the summer. But last year or the year before, the group wanted to meet in the summer. So the ordinance does not specify that either.
Okay.
So I feel that's up to them and the staff that supports them.
Yeah, because they used to like end in May and they would give us a report. Then they'd start up again in August or September. But then, yeah, a couple of years ago, they wanted to go year-round, but it doesn't pan out because they're just too busy. It's too hard to get everybody together.
Right. So we have two things kind of on this one. The first one is first the 15. So, yes, to just advertise so that we equal a 15 so that quorum can be met. And then I might ask you kind of thoughts on suggestions for might be what a good youth council, what a good model might be. And then hopefully they'll have their meeting in May and to maybe make that part of the agenda discussion, right? And then for us as a council to then talk about.
So should I ask them or should I?
I think a little bit of both. Come up with what you think would work, mm-hmm. what you saw at NLC, mm-hmm. right? And then to Andrea's point, actually wrote this down as a later on thing. I think similar to comments for the Disabilities Commission, coming up with more process for how we have our boards and commissions interact with one another as well as with us. I mean, that sort of thing, like if this comes up and it's related to youth, it has to go to the YAC. Yeah, right. All right. Well, thank you for that. Sheila, do you have direction on the first part?
I will only advertise so that we have a maximum of 15 members.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Coming up next is Report 2023. I see Carol here. Carol, I have to say I appreciated my conversations with the members of the Vision Commission, and I'm impressed with the work that they've done since that. So as a reminder, Vision Commission was looking to kind of what does their future look like, and they had talked about looking at this, preparing the Community Excellence Program, communities of excellence look at process improvements within city organizations and kind of best practices. And they started taking the initiative on looking into that and what we could do. Do you have a report or anything you want to share with us, Carol?
Would you like to know more about the Community of Excellence program?
I think that'd be really great.
Okay. So the Community of Excellence journey is a systems-based approach to community performance as defined in the community profile. And the community profile is defined by a geographic area. So a lot of communities that have adopted this program include the school district, the county, the chamber, et cetera, in their geographic area. So it's a multi
institutional or governmental,
yes.
Quasi-governmental.
Yes. So there are currently 25 communities coast to coast that are applying the framework in their community. Excelsior Springs is one, and I believe there's a location in St. Louis.
That Plaza Frontenac?
Yes, maybe? Frontenac, yes. Community systems perspective allows for a shared focus on strategic direction and on residents and other customers, and it really allows for fact-based decision-making. So the Community of Excellence 2026 was adapted from the Baldrige Performance Excellence Framework that was created under the Reagan administration. Some of you may recall that many years ago, the city embarked on the Missouri Quality Award, which is Baldrige-based, and so this is very similar in terms of the framework that they use and the criteria that they use for evaluating such communities. It includes seven categories: community leadership, community strategy, residents and other customers, measurement, analysis, and knowledge management, people resources, community operations, and results. It is a three-phase program, with each phase facilitated over a 12-month period. Applications are being accepted for the seventh cohort beginning in October of 2023 through September of 2024. There is a cost to participate in the program. The phase one cost is $25,000. In phases two and three, the cost is reduced to $15,000 per phase. And while communities only have to commit to one phase at a time, the collaborative is designed as a three-phase engagement. So if we were going to embark on this journey, I would recommend that we commit to a three-phased approach. The first step in joining the Community of Excellence program is to really secure a strong commitment from the key stakeholders, which are located in that geographic area, which I mentioned earlier. From there, you establish structures such as the backbone organization, whose primary role is to manage logistics, such as setting up meetings and locations, and providing administrative support. So in this case, in this instance, I would see the backbone organization being the city. A stable, committed, and connected backbone organization is critically important to the success of this program. Governance or oversight group or council that serves in an advisory function would need to be established. And then a leadership council that sets the community excellence group strategy, direction, and focus. And then you can have one or more task groups to work on these various issues as well. So that's the co-chair of the Vision Commission, the vice chair, another member of the Vision Commission, and myself have been participating in the training that has been held by the Community of Excellence folks. And that is the information that we have gained thus far from those training sessions. I think we've attended two. It's an 8-week training session, so we will have more information at the conclusion of those 8 weeks. Tonight, so some possible next steps would be for us to continue to participate in this training through the 8 weeks. decommission the Columbia Vision Commission at the first meeting in May and establish some sort of performance excellence task force or ad hoc committee immediately to further review the program. And then the task force would focus on process improvement and collaboration by working with city staff and others as appropriate to implement the program.
Well, thank you for that. And I appreciate learning more about the communities of excellence. And it sounds like we still will have a lot of questions, right? Because it needs, like you said, the sign on with the school board and with the county, which might be a topic to bring up at the 4CU meeting about the thing we might be exploring. So it sounds like next steps are, current members of the Vision Commission might be interested if we were to form, but we're kind of waiting to hear more about whether or not we are going to explore this, the moving on into communities of excellence, still learning more. So it sounds like, yes, it's fine to come back with number three for that, and then, but we don't know yet about whether or not to establish the task force until we know more. But it sounds like it's okay for them to continue to do the training. They don't have to be an official member of a commission or board to participate. Is that correct?
Right.
Is there any other questions or thoughts that council have? I appreciate it and want to appreciate their commitment to also seeing the process improvements. So thank you, Carol. Up next, we have report 2123. This is our monthly finance report. Anything that you wanted to highlight, Jim or Matt?
We have our second quarter cash balances on this report. So here to answer any questions you might have or concerns.
Any questions for our finance staff? No questions, Matthew. Thank you. And then obviously up next is our interdepartmental transfer of funds. Anything to highlight from this?
No, not necessarily. No.
Any questions that staff has?
Barbara, can I just ask?
Yes.
I wasn't fast enough getting to the microphone. Our use tax, are we seeing that now? And do we have any idea how much, that was a big question as to how much we might see from that. Do we have any idea?
Yes, we are seeing that now. We estimated that we would receive around 10% of the sales tax number that we brought in, but we're a little higher than that. And it's a little unusual, but it's a good thing at the same time.
So are we seeing more in the general fund than we anticipated at this point in time?
Slightly higher numbers at this time, but it'll really take to the end of the year to see where we end up at to tell.
The end of the fiscal year?
Yes. Okay. So it could be high just for this period. Sometimes they run a little different than the sales tax. So you may have some peaks on sales tax, and then you'll have valleys with the use tax. And so sometimes they run opposite, sometimes they run together. It's kind of hard to tell.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for finance? Thank you.
Thank you.
We are now at our 8:30. General comments by the public. Would anybody from the public wish to speak? I'm writing down the time. Yes, come on up.
Chris Jones, Second Ward. I want to harken back to something that Renee brought up earlier about this when we were discussing the CDBG funds. I would like for council to ask of the council attorney of why she didn't inform or know of about the state funds had been pulled. I think that she really should have informed you of that or been aware of that prior to this happening. There have been many problems with our council attorney, and this is just yet another one. A little more information. It involves the Opportunity Campus, Voluntary Action Center, and the Home ARP funds. I would also like for you to remember that you still have not opened up the ARPA proposals, as have every single other community, including Boone County. That should be something that you guys have said that you wanted to be open, you want to be available, you want for the public to know you're not hiding stuff, but whenever you close information off, like for example, you having a closed session earlier today and not allowing people to come without a lot of information on it, there's a lot of rumors going around because of what you guys did. You should be much more open. It should not say, oh, we're just going to touch on this and then whatever else we want to talk about. You guys should be open at all times. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anybody else from the public wish to speak?
Tommy Jackson, First Ward. I'd like to keep this short and purely introductory. I will just say that I apologize if this is out of line or out of order for being introductory. I'm with the Kinder Institute on Constitutional Democracy at the University of Missouri. We've created a Kinder Institute undergraduate society for the students, and we've been discussing amongst the students what we want our vision of the organization to be going forward. And one thing that we're hearing very, very clearly is that the students want to be more public and more involved in these sort of meetings. So I'm the first student to show up for my organization, but starting in the fall, you should anticipate, hopefully, far more of us. And so I just wanted to introduce with that. I will also say, in a less introductory manner, the students are also very aware of the ARPA fund, ARPA funds being closed. We have been talking about that a lot. The campus has been talking about that a lot. And so I just want to make sure that you are all aware of the facts that the students are watching that, and we are also hoping for those to become more open. Thank you.
Anybody else from the public wish to speak?
Eugene Elkin, 3406. Range Line, since they're leaning on ARPA, and I've never mentioned anything, it's time, let's get it moving. Let's disclose how much interest has been made while you're all waiting to make a decision. Some of the people that do not know how businesses work, you hold large lumps of money and you make billions, sometimes unbelievable amounts of money if you just hang on to it till it gets dispersed, but you only talk about what you dispersed, not what you made. Barbara, you spent a lot of time as an employee telling us how this was all under the word recycling. I was so proud of you. Tonight, when I brought up the brick structure, I didn't hear nobody comment. Why would we want to put the bricks in the landfill? Why are we voting to go to the plastic version cans? And do you not see the future? Hey, I've had it. I ain't going to recycle no more. Now I can throw it in the trash can, and the city can get biogas. Biogas? Wait a minute. If we keep having strangers come to town to live, they're not going to worry about recycling. Hey, that's something other people do. We ain't doing that because we're new in town. The old folks can do it. The point is, 40 years as I look back, that I've recycled very hard. And when you know the largest polluter is on Route B this very day and still exists, why would you want to poison your own drinking water? Because nobody's brought it up recently. This is what tonight's been about. You all make those decisions, and they're not easy. Mr. Knoll, welcome to the crowd. I can't believe the other gentleman didn't get here tonight. I was hoping to talk about something very important that he said. And on that conclusion, try not to sleep at night if you understand what some of the people are saying to you tonight. I'm really serious. This is very much getting out of control when you know that interest is being made on money that's not being moved. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anybody else from the public wish to speak?
Evening. Jim Windsor, 200 Manor Drive. A consultant-designed electric rate increase will eventually come before City Council as an ordinance change. That consultant proposal does the following. It ignores the four-decade-long evolution of Columbia's electric rates, incentives, and customer education that has helped limit the growth of system peak demand. It claims to maintain the current structure when it actually begins the process of flattening the current structure. It would significantly raise costs for low-usage customers while giving high-usage customers a rate decrease during summer peak season. And it conflicts with the goal of the Council-adopted Climate Action and Adaption Plan regarding efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. The consultant said that the residential gas-heated customer class should pay 10.4% more, yet the consultant on March 6th, when they presented information to you, it showed that, and the director of utilities confirmed that average residential gas heated customers will pay 13.8% more. That's 32.7% higher than the 10.4. Worse, small businesses are supposed to pay only 4.9%, but the consultant's presentation shows that the increase will be over 8% for the average small business. That is 65% higher than the 4.9%. I emailed members of City Council and the City Clerk a full ordinance that can be implemented by June 1st. That alternative proposal would do the following: meet revenue requirements, continue the existing rate structure that sends the clear message that the more you use, the more you pay. And it would be compatible with the Climate Action and Adaption Plan. And it would meet the recommended rate increase for each rate class. Until the electric utility has implemented advanced metering infrastructure, all cost of service analysis will be based on assumptions. At this time, the most equitable rate design is to maintain the same structure and implement the needed increase in each level of that structure. I passed out, or I hope you have the graph. That's an illustration of the difference between the proposal of the consultant and the alternative for residential gas heated customers. And it illustrates that the consultant is loading it on the base and the low end, and actually giving decreases on the upper end. And so I would hope you would consider the alternative proposal. And I have over 30 years of experience in rate design and helped change the city's utility structure from the declining block to the inverted structure. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Do you have any questions?
You'll hear from me. Thanks. Anybody from anyone else from the public wish to speak?
Mark Hyam. I live at 1402 Richardson Street, and I'm here representing Mid-Missouri Peace Works. I'm wanting to speak to what Jim Windsor just brought up, but first I want to thank the council for the fact that in handling the roll card issue, you all opted to have three different levels of roll cards, three different prices, and creating a price incentive to use less and recycle more and compost more, which I think is really important and good, and I applaud you for doing that. And I would suggest that what Jim is suggesting here is to do the same thing with electric rates. Essentially, don't maximize the customer charge. Keep that as low as possible, because that's everybody pays the same amount, and instead have people pay more if they use more. And that way, you create more of an incentive for people to get energy efficient and to reduce their excessive consumption. Often they don't need to be using as much, and often people can take steps to make their homes and businesses more energy efficient if they feel a price incentive, a cost incentive to do that. So I would suggest looking closely at what Jim has put together. He has much more expertise in these matters than I do or any of you do, I know. And I think he has a lot of good ideas here. So I hope you'll consider that. And hopefully, when you adopt a new rate structure, you'll do it relatively soon, but do it in a way that really helps us move towards our goals of getting to being essentially climate friendly. So thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Would anyone else from the public wish to speak? Seeing none, we'll go to council comments. Andrea, I will start with you.
Have anything?
Roy, anything? Nick Foster?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention one thing just to draw a little bit of attention to it. It was in the consent agenda. I think it was right that it was, but resolution 6223, which deals with the agreement with OpenGov and the budgeting software there. It took a minute to get here with OpenGov, but I'm just really pleased that that's taken place. It's one of those things that once it's in place, it will expand the capacity of our finance department, but it'll also make our budget and our budgeting process and our financials more accessible to the public. So I'm really pleased about that. I just wanted to be sure that we noted that that's what we did tonight when we included that in the consent agenda, and I look forward to seeing it come online.
Betsy?
I guess the main question I have is to see if we could get a report on the Colt Railroad. I guess I've been driving up and down Paris Road lately, so I have to stop and say the blooming of all of the orange bags for recycling has been very lovely to see both there on Vandiver and everywhere else that I've been in the city. So I want to thank the citizens who've been going out of their way to pick that stuff up. But that made me sort of look at the Colt Railroad. And I wondered if we could get a report on exactly what that does for us. I know it goes from the transload and brings some, used to bring some things back into town. And that it's not being used now because we have two bridges that are not in good shape. What are the plans for that? I know we had long discussions about adding to that so that we would also have a trail, but I'm wondering whether we need to perhaps get rid of that railroad and just use that as a trail. But I don't know what the logistics of that are. I don't know if we can do that from a railroad. I don't know what we need to do. So I'm sort of wondering if we could get a report on
how long is that?
What does that do for us? And what are our options?
And we do have a railroad advisory board. So involving them in that conversation and having that report come would be appreciated.
Okay. So do I need to then
Let's just see.
We'll get it done.
Yeah. It's kind of an update on what's going on with it. Because transload is still very heavily used.
Absolutely.
For storage, obviously for a lot of the Route B.
Yeah, I think the big question that we'll have that we need to talk about is do we want to repair the line going across 70 to actually allow for the Colt Railroad to come into town or into downtown, or do we want to keep it where it is now? And then what becomes with that bridge that crosses 70? But we'll have a report in a future council meeting.
Yes, I think including the commission is a great idea. I
totally
forgot about them.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah. Anything else, Betsy?
Nope.
Okay. Nick, any council comments? Okay. So coming for me, I've got a couple. One first is obviously like many others, I've been following the shooting of Ralph Yarl, the 16-year-old in Kansas City, and just the acknowledgement over that. And I know today, Missouri Foundation for Health has been in town today talking about firearm violence, and we'll continue to be here for a few weeks coming forward. We have a few different sessions on that and just what we can do on that. So I think, DeCurley, I think we've asked you before an update also on our violence intervention programs and where that assessment, the status of that. So when we get to your time, if you have an update or timing.
I don't have an update at this meeting, but I did get to talk to Stephanie Browning earlier, and so she's putting together something.
Okay, yeah. For that, I also, when one of the things that I also, we mentioned at the beginning of the meeting was about the Historic Preservation Commission. I did hear back from the chair. So Historic Preservation Commission is one of our commissions that has two seats on it that are have a requirement to go with them. One is a real estate investor, and the other one is expertise in historic preservation. Our current real estate investor is also an expert in historic preservation. It is Tanner Ott. And so what they requested was that perhaps we could see if Tanner, which has the same exact terms as the historic preservation, if maybe we can, if council is agreeable, switch Tanner to the historic preservation slot and then re-advertise the investor, the remaining term for the investor slot. Obviously, I'd want to clear this. Would have to come back to us. Would it have to come back to us, Sheila, if we, because we're not removing it altogether yet, giving it an opportunity.
Would what need to come back to you?
We wouldn't have to come back to us.
I mean, I'm advertising right now the expert position. So if you choose to make that switch, unless you want to check with Tanner if he's agreeable. But I mean, the term is the same. So yeah. I'm not sure it matters. We can then just advertise
the investor
position instead of the expert position on Wednesday and this weekend.
If Tanner Ott is agreeable to switching what his designee is on the Historic Preservation Commission, is council supportive over that?
Yes, I am anyway.
So we still have both slots still on our commission. Right. We're going to try to do this.
Yeah, we just move him from
classify, from classify and the then advertise the investor. If he's not, then we can come back to us about maybe removing the expertise.
I will reach out to him tomorrow.
Okay. Okay.
Great.
Unless he's proactive in listening to this and reaches out to me.
I have not gotten a text message while we're sitting here, so actually. Okay. And then the next one is, this is something I've been thinking about for the last week. And so I wrote it down because there's a lot of words in my heart in this. And it's for our members of the transgender community and their families. And I want them to know that they are loved and they are welcomed in Columbia. Actions by many state legislators, including Missouri's, are making people in our community feel unwelcome and unvalued. Many people have told me that they're scared about how some of these actions impact their lives in Columbia. We're fortunate to be part of a community where we care for one another. I say if you want to show support for our trans members in our community, now is the time. We must be better than this, like many things. As the mayor of Columbia, I cannot change the actions that are happening in these legislatures, but I can work to ensure that our community is welcoming and that we can serve as a lighthouse for Missourians who feel unwelcome elsewhere. So I wanted to share that, knowing that there's a lot of questions out there on these things, but that Columbia is loving, and I assume all up here are supportive of that. Any comments from staff?
I don't have any.
Anything, Nancy? Sheila? All right, I'm going to adjourn our meeting at 8:50.